on the road again, brought to you by our friend from Atlanta area, BMW. And we are in a bad ride. This is a 007 car.
Yeah, man.
A BMW MX i6 competition. She is red and black, and she is fast. Our buddy Joe Coleman from Athens BMW gave me the keys today. Said, be careful.
Make a joke.
Sneaky fast. I was saying, when I got this from my buddy Derek and Ricky up in Greenville back in the fall, they said, be careful. This thing can move. And I looked at him coming off an exit ramp. It felt like I was doing about 45 or 50. I was doing 93. So we were zipping right along there. But some of the cool features on this, you've got Dave can't see it from the passenger seat, but it's got what the speed limit is and the MPH. It flashes it up right in front of you there. And then you can turn the radio up and down kind of Harry Potter style just by wiggling. See, there we go.
Just did it right there.
Just by wiggling your finger. So that's really neat. And we are heading down to Gainesville, Florida. As we broadcast here on a Thursday afternoon, love hitting the road and so excited. It's been a terrific season for Georgia with all this team's had to overcome. They've got so much fight and heart and spunk, and looking forward to these last two weekends. We got the Gators and we got Tech in Atlanta and then the Ole Miss Rebels. So we thought we'd have a good time and talk about life on the road with Georgia baseball.
Look at there's a hit. I'm not making this up. There's a hitchhiker right there. So, I haven't seen a hitchhiker in forever.
So that's something that you don't see anymore. And I'm thinking back when I was a kid, and I'm traveling with my grandparents. Let's see, which way are we going?
We're going left here.
Oh, okay. Yep. But I'm traveling with my grandparents or on Eatonton Road here or with my folks. Back in the late 70s, you saw hitchhikers all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And even I know locally, I had asked the great Claude Felton once when I lived on the east side. He said, yeah, I used to live on the east side. I go, oh, how long did it take you to drive? Well, I didn't have a car. Well, how'd you get to class? Well, I just hitchhiked to class. I'm like, really?
Have you ever hitchhiked?
No.
We did
who would pick up a hitchhiker?
We did one time when we were in college. We were at Myrtle Beach for spring break, and we were trying to get from one place to another. It's too far to walk, so we started walking away, and we started hitchhiking. I think there were like three of us. So this guy just drove up, and he's in a truck, pickup truck. So where are y'all going? We told him. He's like, just jump in the back. And he took us to where we were going. So I've actually hitchhiked. I don't know if that technically counts.
That counts.
But
had the thumb out.
We had the thumb out. The guy picked us up. He took us and dropped us off. No one got killed. No one disappeared.
But the thing, too, I think for a hitchhiker as well, I'm sure you guys are in whatever, a golf shirt, shorts, bathing suits.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
you look harmless, but that would probably be the most dangerous kind because somebody with the long,
right,
stringy hair and like a Megadeth or black t-shirt or something
would
with a pocket
knife. Would you stop and pick that person up?
No, I would not.
But would you pick up a Ted Bundy like?
See, there you go. That's as dangerous.
Yeah, yeah.
So you never know what you're going to see on the road. Now, one of the things that we do, and traveling around the league for so many years, we do have our favorite spots to go in the conference. When you're talking about grabbing a bite to eat, there's a good little Italian place we like to go to in Gainesville. I found a Meat and Three. It's a restaurant down there called Harry's that's really good. So this year, things have been unusual. We had to go commercial on a couple of trips because we went to the three furthest most outposts this year in Missouri, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. So have you had a favorite spot or two on the road this year to eat?
Let's see here. All right. So we didn't really do anything in Arkansas. And by the way, when we have a Saturday night
game, that's a killer.
You don't get that Saturday afternoon game where you can finish the game and then go have dinner somewhere.
Right.
So you don't really get to do that. And this weekend we're going to have a Saturday night game. Last weekend, we had a Saturday night game. When you were in Missouri, I didn't go to Missouri. That was like the first road trip I missed in a long time.
Right.
But did y'all do anything Saturday night?
No. Not I mean,
that game was like kind of a mid-afternoon, late-afternoon start.
There was a restaurant / bar at the hotel, and Lake and I just went and got something to eat there.
Well, that place, because we always stay at that place in Missouri, that little restaurant bar is kind of clutch because it's usually always open.
Right, the sports zone.
Yeah, and they serve breakfast too.
So that's a good thing.
Catch about any meal. And I was sitting there trying to think because we went to, when we went to Nashville, now that's, Nashville's just completely different.
Because it's a big city.
Yeah, I mean, you could find anything there. And we tried to go to like that barbecue joint that's across from the hotel, and it was gone.
It's horrible.
I know there's a lot of, and I hate it too because COVID changed a lot of things as far as restaurants and stuff. So we wanted to go there, but it didn't exist. And what was the restaurant that was, or not, what is it now? Because remember we walked over there and there was this like guy on a bullhorn telling people how to eat the meal.
Yeah.
So we turned around and got out of there.
Yeah, had to eat their Nashville chicken. There was no place.
That's what it was.
It's
some kind of chicken place.
It's like when you go to these, have you ever eaten at so-and-so restaurant? Well, no. Is there anything special? Do I have to have chopsticks? By the way, where's Highway 83? We got to head towards Monticello.
Oh, is that the way we're headed?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I figured we're just... Just go towards making it.
Well, we can 575. Do that too. Yeah, we'll keep on trucking this way.
No, but that was like that place in Nashville. I was kind of disappointed.
It was odd. So we wound up going to a pretty good chain there. But one of the things too, definitely the Saturday night game's a killer because we do like to get, you know, with the two of us in Lake, our SID, Christopher Lakos, we do like to get, you know, a good Saturday night meal there. That kind of makes the road trip. So when you got the Saturday night games, it just kind of kicks you in the teeth.
Yeah.
And it throws everything.
I also feel bad, too, because people will come up to me and say, hey, we're going to Fayetteville for football, or we're going to go to Starkville for football. And you've been to every SEC town, haven't you? It's like, yeah. And it's like, well, where do you recommend? And then I feel bad sometimes because it's like, well, someone was asking about Fayetteville, and mm-hmm. I was like, well, Jeff likes this place called Doe's.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what else? I'm like, well, it's kind of weird because when we go to the places we have to fly, we don't have a car.
Right.
So we're a little bit at the mercy of what might be within walking distance or something like that. We're not always staying close to places. So we, like, got we didn't even get to go to Doe's this year.
No, we got lucky in Arkansas. This lucky, unlucky, we couldn't go to Doe's or Herman's or some of our favorite places there, but there were a few chains right next to the hotel, so at least we could walk somewhere.
Yeah. Now, I'll say this, because people like some of these little inside stories. So there was a place across from our hotel that was like a pizza place.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't a chain. And I don't even remember what the name of it is now. And it was fine.
That's good, yeah.
But there was the young lady who was the hostess.
Yes.
She was in a supervisory role. And this place said, a lot of restaurants you go into now, they have signs on the door that say, you got to have a mask. You walk in, and nobody's wearing a mask.
Right.
So we go into this place, and they got the signs that say, you got to have a mask. We walk in, we don't have a mask. And the girl gives us masks. Like, okay. And before Jeff could even put his mask on, he had turned around and said something to me. And she's like, sir, you need to put your mask on.
Well, you just handed it to her.
I'm like, wow.
She was aggressive in a supervisory role. One might call her power tripping.
And man, so then she tells us there's no seats at the bar, so like for us to wait, because there's like a 20-minute wait. So Jeff, which was awesome, goes over to the bar anyway.
I noticed that
there were some seats.
There were a couple of plates, and the guy was clean. I go, is this first come, first serve? Yeah. Should I go, whoop. Gave Dave the sign. Yeah,
walk over there.
Yeah.
But then she would not stop staring at us. And maybe it was because of our good looks, but it also might
probably
have been because she thought that we were trying to circumvent the system there.
Well, we beat the system, I'll tell you that.
Well, I mean, it was just, come on. Let's just settle down a little bit. And the place ended up being good, and everything was fine, and she didn't say anything else, and she didn't cause any issues or anything like that. But it was interesting that
she was
you
aggressive.
Got yelled at for not putting your mask on within 15 seconds of it being handed to you.
She was very aggressive. Very aggressive.
But everything else was fine, and the food was good, and everything. Yeah, so, but it was interesting that I was a little surprised that Fayetteville felt, or at least the part of Fayetteville that we were in, felt more closed than I was thinking it was going to be.
But the good news is the stadium was not.
That was awesome.
It was awesome to see. And Dave, I know we got the heads up. And again, we're broadcasting this. We're taping it on a Thursday. We got the heads up yesterday/Wednesday. And Josh Brooks, our great AD, announced that we were going to be 100% capacity for the Ole Miss game. And, man, was that exciting news. And I know for our fans who've gotten to go to limited games or some fans who hadn't gotten to go to any, I hope everybody who wants to go gets a chance to at least make it to one of those Ole Miss games. And that's the best news we've had in a long time.
And as of this morning, so we're driving to Gainesville on Thursday. As of this morning, there were still tickets left. And it's the link is easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I even went through it. I didn't buy any tickets, but I even went through the link to act like I was buying some just to see how easy it was to get them.
Right.
It was so simple.
No, it's a great – our ticket office does a great job.
Yep.
It's a piece of cake. And I've had friends send me tickets on my phone that then I forward to somebody else who's going, and I'm low tech, and it works
too.
Just fine. So no, that's a really cool thing. But that was awesome news to see, and hopefully this team. I mean, it's crazy the injuries we've had, the attrition. Not even talking about the guys we lost from last year's team. I mean, that's going to happen. We had bad luck with the draft. It happens. But when you think about Childers and Brown, then in-season C.J. Smith and Ryan Webb, who's having a great year, we've just had all these injuries, in particular our pitching staff. You know, we've lost Josh McAllister 3 different times. But this team has so much heart and fight and spunk. They've just been – I mean, they just when you think they're about to go down, I mean, they come off the deck and respond, and that's why I feel even this latest injury at Webb is great. That I just have this team is going to find a way to do what it takes to make it to the postseason.
To me, it's like, okay, and it's just a little bit of the personality of the team. They have played up to their opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Even a little bit down to the opponents, although I think when I say that, that's probably not being fair to the opponents. Because, like, for Auburn, you know, we lost 2 out of 3 at home to Auburn, but we knew they were much better than their record with all those close losses. But anyway, that's why, like, coming down here to Gainesville next week against Ole Miss, I expect Georgia to play well. And I know the pitching injuries are really, really hurting right now.
I'll tell you what else is hurting. There's a log truck or something.
Yeah,
I was just gonna say,
we're south of Madison and we're in a traffic jam. So hey, I could have gone to Atlanta for this.
Yeah, that's no good.
By the way, something you said a moment ago about spunk. Hey, you got spunk.
Oh, thank you.
I hate spunk. What about, do you know what I'm quoting?
I don't know that one.
Mary Tyler Moore.
Oh, wow.
When
Lou Grant?
Lou Grant told her she had spunk. I hate spunk.
Lou Grant. Now, there was a show that had some spinoffs.
Oh, my gosh.
The Lou Grant Show.
Did Mary Tyler Moore have more spinoffs than any other show?
All right, so you had that. You had Rhoda.
You had Rhoda and you had Phyllis.
And then just thinking too about who Captain Stubing was on there. Was on the Love Boat. Betty White.
Betty White was on the Golden Girls. Yep.
And so it had, and then of course Ted Knight.
It was Ted Knight.
Caddyshack and Too Close for Comfort.
Too Close for Comfort. And then what was his wife's name on the show? She was actually the mom of one of the characters on Everybody Loves Raymond.
Oh, okay. Doris Roberts?
No. It was she was Mary Tyler Moore's friend.
The spinoff series. It was interesting.
Yeah.
I saw a History of Television thing, and it was interesting on Mary Tyler Moore that they said originally they wanted her character to be divorced.
Yeah.
And they said, well, we can't do that because everybody will think she divorced Dick Van Dyke.
Right.
And they'll hate her because he was one of the most popular people in America. So met him.
Yeah, no.
Therefore, I guess he was just never married.
It's a totally different thing now. But back then, that was a big concern.
It was a big deal. And by the way, the thing there, we're going to make it after all. I don't know if we're going to make it to Gainesville. There's a traffic jam here. Dave's hitting the
waves. I'm looking for alternate routes.
See, this, I always go Highway 83, but I think this bypass thing here has gotten us thrown off. So maybe we should turn around. What do you think?
Let's check the Waze first.
All right, checking Waze here.
Let's see. No, not Gainesville, Georgia.
Gainesville, Florida.
That would have been funny if we'd started going to Gainesville, Georgia.
Oh, gosh.
We get to Gainesville, and all of a sudden we realize we're in the wrong place.
Yeah, punch us to Highway 83.
All right. So, let's see here. Come on, baby.
Yeah, because this...
It's not even giving us an alternate route. So we're stuck on this.
We're not moving. Can you put in there and see how to get to 83?
I think
we passed around it.
I don't know if I can do this. See.
Drive to say,
go to 83. You take a right here.
This road here.
Seven Island Road. Yeah, let's see. I don't know. We are literally not moving.
Yeah, try to hit the...
Yeah, let's see.
Do navigation Highway 83.
Yeah. Now, you know this car we're in, we can just do that with a voice command, but I don't know how to do it.
Okay.
It's got a little microphone there if you punch that.
Hey, BMW, get me to Highway 83.
Hey.
In front of this large truck.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't appreciate that. So we're just going to do a U-ey here.
We're about to do a U-ey. Do a little. There used to be a traffic trooper in Nashville, Tennessee on a, what's the big state, WLAC. Her name was U-Turn Laverne.
Yeah.
She, like her man, the great, late, great Captain Herb Henry.
That's right.
Oh, U-Turn Laverne. So there you go. Old BMW's got us going good.
By the way, how great is that? So we got to go 5 miles back, but it's going to give us a different route.
See, if we'd have just gone the way I wanted the whole time, and I get turned around sometimes on these bypasses. I don't have the greatest sense of direction on the back road, so that's where this modern technology and stuff is really, 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 really cool stuff. All right, so heading down to Gainesville, like we said, so excited about this Georgia team. And, you know, just this year, obviously, it's been so strange. But with losing last season, and coincidentally, that was much earlier in the year, we were essentially on our way to Florida when everything went literally and figuratively south. We were going south, and then we got the news, obviously, on March 12th last year. And, again, that was going to be the first week of SEC play. This is week 9. So, in many ways, even though it's been over a year, I guess right at 15 months now, the fact that we are getting down to Gainesville, I think it represents another just victory for us. And David and I talk about
this,
just how thankful and grateful we are to be playing. And I mean, things like that. And I think that's one thing during all the madness we all talk about. Boy, I'm not taking anything for granted. I'm telling you, years ago, that traffic jam, man, I would have been like Yosemite Sam. My hat would have been blown off. But now it's like,
We could still be grumpy about things.
Sure.
That doesn't mean we're not grateful that we're playing baseball again. And with the announcement that next week's going to be full, I think that just is a sign that we know what's going to be coming in the fall. And to see Sanford Stadium packed out again in the fall is going to be phenomenal. I hope the Bank of America Stadium up in Charlotte is going to be packed out with Georgia and Clemson fans. And I'll say this, if it's not, then that game shouldn't be played there.
Well,
but I think it will be.
I think it will be. And I think the fact that it was getting floated, and when we were at Clemson a month or so ago, that, hey, you know, if it's not 100%, that thing's going on campus.
It should.
And
you'd have two teams coming to their state from states that are open
Right.
To play to a limited capacity.
Exactly.
That would make no sense. But North Carolina's got, I'm feeling confident that it'll be fine by September and we'll be good to go.
You know, it's interesting. I got to do a virtual meet and greet with Kirby the other day. And I want to brag on him real quick. He is so great with this stuff. We did a contest, and the winner got to pick three friends to go on and spend 30 minutes virtually awesome. With Kirby. And the young girl who won is, I mean, a awesome psycho Georgia football fan. Her name's Camille. She's from the state of Alabama, so she had her boyfriend on with her. She was wearing a Kirby 16 jersey, and she had two of her sorority sisters, one of whom is from Statesboro. Woo-hoo. And so that was really cool. But he is so great at stuff like that, and he has that ability to just I think make anybody feel warm and welcome. And I'm sure that's one of those traits that serves him so well on the recruiting front. But one of the things that he said about playing Clemson, and I've always thought for several reasons you should play somebody really good in your opener. And in this case, if you know, in most years it's been eight SEC Tech and then one other big name opponent. I mean, essentially you're going in off an open date, and you want to have either an easy game or an open date for one of your huge games. And Coach Dooley always said, too, that you knew a lot more about your team if you played an excellent opponent in that first game. So even if you lost, and I always thought about, you know, in the early 80s, we had Tennessee, Clemson, and UCLA. And Kirby brought up a good point, too. He said, I'm telling you, he said that the last 2 days of spring practice, they focused exclusively on Clemson. And I think when you get in the grind, maybe at the end of spring, and certainly when you get, you know, over that 10-day, two-week mark of preseason practice, the fact that you've got Clemson coming up, you've got a big-name opponent, he said that just has the guys so much more jacked up at practice.
I used to be one of those that thought, open with a lesser opponent, you get your feet wet, and then play that big game in week two. But I don't feel that way anymore. I like having that big game to open the season.
I think it's neat. And things we don't even really think about, too. And again, this is something Kirby brought up on this meet and greet. And you know, he said, you know, when you look at all the different college football sites, those biggest games in the country, oh, Georgia versus Clemson, oh, that's getting people's attention. And which the funny part is, please nobody should be, it is undoubtedly 100% the least important game on Georgia's schedule this year.
I agree.
If there was one you could pick to lose, that would be it. And who knows? You know, you could lose that game, or whoever loses that game, you could get a rematch in the college football playoff. Now, that being said, for whoever wins that game, A, you're going to have some margin for error, and B, that's going to be a huge confidence boost there. And I think back to, remember DJ back at 17 after we had beaten Notre Dame, we all kind of said, like, okay, it would be good for us if Notre Dame kept winning, and Notre Dame had a good year. And when those rankings started coming out, we got to number two, and then we got up to number one. Thank you very much, BMW. And the so much of the credit for that was that win over Notre Dame and how big that was. And just getting that premier, that elite non-conference win. So for whichever one of these teams, Georgia or Clemson, wins that game, that is going to be a huge lift on that end. But at the same time, for the loser, it's not like it's a death blow.
Some teams, or one team's going to have a quality win and the other team's going to have a quality loss.
Sure, sure.
That's basically what it comes down to. Although I will say it'll probably be held against Clemson a little more if they don't win because of being in the ACC.
I mean, that's a good point.
They would have to run the table, I would think. Or maybe not run the table, but they would have to win the ACC championship.
Yeah, I would think so, too. We're not getting on I-20.
Yeah, that's where they're taking us.
In the quarter of a mile, we turn left on 2 inches.
Yeah.
All right.
So we see we were going to have to jump on 20 for, like, till the next exit.
Okay. Hey, there's
– all right.
Oh, boy, we got fast food city right here.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. So here we go. Thanks to that traffic jam, we are just wheeling around rural Georgia right now.
Yes, sir.
So as we head down to Gainesville, of course, I think every Georgia fan, at some point, pretty much every day, the Georgia-Florida game, I'm going. The Georgia-Florida game comes to mind, and this year's game down in Jacksonville, it's always got major stakes. And I, you know, presuming that the injuries aren't just insane and, you know, everything's kind of on the up and up there, I really like Georgia's chances in Jacksonville this year. And I was kind of thinking, you know, of the many accomplishments the Bulldogs have had in football here under Kirby's watch, how big it was, you know, going back to when Coach Richt was here, to win the 3 in a row, 11 through 13, then Kirby got the 3 straight, 17 through 19, to win the decade against Florida. After what had happened, we were but 3-18 against them from 1990 to 2010. But to win the decade after just going down there and losing so many times, I thought that was a great accomplishment for our program.
Well, if nothing else, just kind of getting over the hump of how many times had we gone down to Jacksonville with a better team.
Right.
But there was just that bad feeling of having lost so many games down there where it was in our heads. And that's actually switched. I know Florida won the last game, but
right.
You kind of felt like that had started happening to them.
No doubt. I mean,
so that was good to see the series switch over like that.
For sure. And this game's always so big, and it's fun for us. But, man, this thing got us going the right direction. Did you used to have a road map in your car?
Oh, yeah.
Me too. I had a map of the Southeast in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a must to have there. But, you know, in Georgia, Florida, they're just –
I couldn't fold the map, though.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, that was a hard thing to do.
It would always just get kind of crumbled.
Yeah, to get the perfect fold there.
Yeah.
But I know for me, kind of thinking about the memories – The 80 through 83, those will always be.
That's why you wanted to go 83.
Ooh, that's a good call. Yeah, that's a good
call. So that's what this is about.
So the
good karma.
The 226-20, although I'm still too nervous to watch the Ballou to Scott game. But
all right, we're going to go left here, even despite what she's
Monticello.
Telling us. Yes. Now we can turn her off. There we go. I got us over here on the way.
So. Yeah, those, and then of course the 44-0 and 82, and the 10-9, the first of the 10-9
in
1983 was so big, and so those will always be my most treasured Georgia Florida memories. But I got to tell you, you know, some here I'd say in the last 25 years or so, certainly when Coach Donnan's team, we went down there in 97 and won 37-17. A young safety named Kirby Smart had 2 interceptions that day. That one was so big because it beat a streak. And then, you know, kind of thinking again about Kirby's wins. And that first one there in 2017, the fact that not only did we win, but we won 42-7, and it could
awesome.
Have been worse than that. That was a great, 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 great day for us.
So it was 42-0, wasn't it?
It was.
They scored at the end.
They brought in that quarterback that transferred from Notre Dame. Yeah, he got a little scramble in there. I think Roquan and the first team defense, they weren't too happy either. They wanted the shutout.
Yeah.
And Florida had also, I don't think they've been shut out since then. I might be wrong, but I think they hadn't been shut out since, I think maybe once since we beat them 44-0 in 82. But they've got the longest non-shutout streak going too. So I was kind of hoping to spring that one on them too. But anyways, that one was so big, and I think it just kind of. And it signaled, you know, that Georgia was back on top there. And the path to Atlanta in the SEC title game runs through Jacksonville.
Let me ask you this, because I'm going to take it back to Clemson for a moment and talk about Kirby. So the Dogs lost to Clemson in 90. That was up there.
Woo!
And that was Georgia's only scoring drive was negative yardage. But
little John Casey.
Yeah. Split one the field goal after a fumble and Georgia went backwards.
That's
91 was a great win.
It was.
All right, so we played them again in what, 94?
We beat them 40-14 in Athens.
And then in 95, beat them up there. Corin Terzi
and Brian Smith.
Yeah.
That's when they came out on the field. That game wasn't on TV, and they were wearing these old purple and orange.
Yeah.
And Munson Clemson looking like cheap Halloween candy.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Just epic Munson.
By the way, that's Dr. Brian Smith to us now.
Oh, he's awesome.
His father just passed away, so our condolences.
Was he a Spartanburg guy?
He was from Spartanburg, yeah. Spartanburg High School. Yep. He and Steven Davis.
Oof.
Now, there was a running back.
Oof.
There was a good player. So, all right, so 95. Then when did we play them again?
I think the next was in the 02.
So, Kirby, he never played against Clemson.
95.
The 95 game. Okay, yeah. The 95 was his freshman year.
Right.
Okay. But then after that, that was it until...
Yeah, the 02-03. That 02 game was a great game.
Yep.
We beat them 31-28, then went over there and beat them 30-0.
Shut them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
Full warm that day.
It was.
Isn't that the day y'all didn't have... No one had any ice.
They ran out of ice.
Yeah, at Clemson.
A friend of mine, he was he had been dating his now wife for maybe a year or so, and blah, blah, blah. Her dad went to Clemson, and so he was meeting the dad before the Clemson game, which I'm like, well, this guy's a psycho Georgia fan like us. So, well, that's not a good time for you to try to make a good first impression
right. The
day of a Georgia football game. Plus, my buddy Rob, he's got a big Rolling Stones tattoo on his calf. So his wife, Amy, wasn't going to let him, like, I don't want Dad to see that tattoo. So it's 130 degrees. So he had to wear long pants, too. So that's when
it's all Mick Jagger.
Yeah, he had to meet the parents before that one. So that was a tough spot to do that. Long pants.
A little warm.
At 130 degrees, too.
I didn't mean to sidetrack us off the floor, thinking about Clemson.
Yeah, that's this guy had another good story, too. I guess it was the year before, I guess they were going up to meet the parents and yes, he lived in Charlotte at the time. So they were going to meet Amy's parents in Charlotte. I guess it's when he had to prove the true love. That's the day of the green to Michael Johnson, the Georgia-Auburn game. And, so there are a lot of people around and blah, blah, blah. And he's sitting there freaking out. The game's on TV, but has to be dressed nice. And so remember the possession before the TD, we had gotten good field position but couldn't do anything. Our offense was just stuck in the mud for so much of that game. And said some guy in the living room goes, well, why don't they just try a field goal? And my buddy, trying not to lose his head, goes, well, because we're down by four and it'd be 67 yards.
Yeah, who did you think we were? The Green Bay Packers?
Oh, my gosh.
That's hilarious.
Oh, but the stories and how much of them. That's what makes college sports, especially college football. It is just something we can all relate to by a way. It was that game. You immediately know the year, and it brings so many of us back together year after year, fall after fall, and that's why it's the greatest. You know, we've talked about this too, DJ. I mean, for me, and obviously we're working, but, you know, football's unbelievable. It's nothing like Georgia football. It's been the center of my universe since I can remember. But it's so crazy. There's so much going on. I'll tell you, the spring is hard to beat. We're late spring now, but we have those weekends, like when you got baseball and tennis both going on. You know, if there's a swim meet, a track meet happening, you know, the golf team going. But I think for us, just calling the baseball games, when we got baseball and tennis both going, that's when I'll tell my friends, like, that's when you guys need to come into town.
Mm-hmm.
To me, those are the funnest weekends.
And both the men and women have made it to the round of 16 of the NCAAs. So phenomenal job there.
How about our women's golf team?
Believe me, I was not going to let us finish this without mentioning Coach Brewer and the women's golf team. So they finished, I believe, 14 or dead last at the SEC championships.
Now, and we had a lot of players.
I was going to get all that. So I know a lot of people are like, what's going on? This is terrible. This is embarrassing. And does every school play golf in the women's sports? Are there 14?
So I think we've got 14. Yeah.
So we end up finishing last in that. But what people didn't realize, Josh didn't make excuses or anything. But we got hit with the COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And how many? We were at least our top three. Well, top four were out. Top four were out.
The dreaded words,
contact tracing.
Yeah, they weren't all sick or anything, but the contact tracing. Georgia goes over there, and again, considering the circumstances, they did well.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Well, I'll just give you an example.
Gabby Kalea wasn't even supposed to play.
No, she wasn't, and Gabby has had the back surgeries, and she is a terrific player here and just a great kid, loves baseball. And so that's where we met Gabby up in the Foley Field box, working for the great Christopher Lakers. But Gabby had been injured. She played, had a great last round at the Liz Murphy. And Josh had called her and said, like, hey, will you come be a third assistant, basically a student coach, to go walk with the girls? And she said, sure, I'd love to do it. Well, then she gets a call like, hey, you got to play. I mean, basically, she's been retired.
Yeah.
And she went out and played and did a good job. Yeah. So that was the spot we were in. And then, my goodness, they pulled it all together.
So that's what I was going to say. So a lot of people are like, what's going on with our women's golf team? This is embarrassing. Well, get the lineup back out there, and what ends up happening, not only do they win this regional up in Ohio, they run away with it. They lap the field. Duke, I believe, was the number two team, and they finished 15 shots back.
That's
and when incredible. I say the number two team, I'm talking about number two in the country.
Nah, that's incredible.
That's insane. So so happy for Josh and all the young ladies, and I can't wait to see what they do out in Arizona next week in the NCAAs, the men and the women are playing at the same place.
So, and the men will be in the Tallahassee.
They start the Tallahassee Regional coming up, this weekend, as they're the number two seed.
And the regionals, as I ran into Coach Hack earlier this week, that's the most nervy event. You just want to get through. And through the years, a lot of great teams have picked a bad time to play
bad. Have a bad weekend.
And then, boy, you have this great year. You don't make the main draw. That reminds me of something, too. And I like what they're doing with the match play at the NCAAs and the SEC. So, basically, what you do, you have the stroke play that's, I guess, three rounds in SECs, four at the NCAAs. I think that's right. And then you get down to your top eight, and then it's match play, and that's your champion. In my opinion, they should hand out two championship trophies. I think if you win the stroke play event – that should be a national or an SEC championship. And if you win the match play, it should be two. So like our men's team won the stroke play, and then we dropped a tight one to Texas A&M, who was the number two ranked team in the country. But at the stroke play, they finished eighth. So that was the one versus eight. That's kind of – and just the nature of golf, the way it goes, that's a difficult chore. So, you know, it's almost now in the stroke play, you want to play good, but not that great. You know, you don't want to spend all your bullets. Because what was it, two or three years ago, maybe it was that A&M team that had Hovland and Wolf on it there. Didn't they win the stroke play by like 17 or something? But then they lost in the match play.
The Oklahoma State team played. Yeah, I was trying to remember who it was they played against.
Yeah, but they
had some – it's funny – Wolf is still the defending champion.
That's true.
Had a tournament since 2019.
But I'd like to see
him. Yeah, that's the thing.
I'd like to see him. I just think that's the thing. There ought to be two trophies.
Yeah.
Because we both love golf, and you know the way it match play is completely different than stroke play. Completely different.
Mindset, everything.
Yes, but I love the stroke play.
That's a lot of That's a lot of mulch. A
lot of mulch out there.
If that's what that is, I guess it is.
We are somewhere. Are we between Madison and Monticello right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
By the way, this is drive two, and I've done this several times. You want to be in the daylight on old Highway 83 because it is dark at night.
It's dark out here.
There are no lights.
I think, too, and this is probably – I shouldn't even say this because I'm going to cause us a problem here, but I've noticed, too, where it's like – there's so many deer now that, like, when you see one, they don't even, like, hardly run out in front of cars. I know I'm asking for it by saying that.
Well, what? This car,
knock on wood.
By the way, if we hit a deer, I cannot pay for this out of pocket. Just to let you know.
Yeah.
This car.
When I drive into work every morning, I see more deer than cars.
Yes.
And they just sit there and stare at you.
Yeah.
They don't even, like, dart off.
Yeah, knock on wood.
Yeah. I shouldn't have even brought that up.
This thing is... Yeah, basically more expensive than many houses.
Oh, yeah.
We're driving this
when
time.
We come back on Sunday, it's going to be dark when we come through here on Sunday.
Yeah, it will. Well, Johnston, you've gone and jinxed us.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. But
the mighty Munson.
The mighty Munson. That is a great man. We miss him every day. And, you know, we talk about this a lot because I think anybody in baseball is an amateur weatherman.
It's
the first thing we do. I'll get out when you can get, what is it on the phone? Was it 9-10 days ahead?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'll start when we're going somewhere. Like, I started looking at Gainesville last Friday in Fayetteville, and you're just looking at the weather, and we'll always just joke about it. Because also the dreaded words is, well, there's a window. Oh, my gosh.
Boy.
That means we got to wait around. But
oh, boy.
Can you imagine Munson with all this modern technology? Oh, my gosh. Because that man loved the weather.
Well, how about last week in Fayetteville, we had a 90-minute rain delay.
Mm-hmm.
We hadn't sat in the press box for a rain delay all year. I don't think we did last year. Doesn't happen as much as it used to.
No, the league has done a great job getting in front on things, but it's just Fayetteville, that part of the country. I mean, you've essentially got the Great Plains hitting the Ozarks there. I mean, weather can pop in there. We've been out there for snow, tornadoes, floods, you name it. So, that was...
By the way, shout out to Shady Dale.
Shady Dale City Hall right there and the bank. You got the bank and City Hall all right there in Shady Dale, Georgia. We're heading to Monticello. You got Larry's Corner Martin Cafe.
Larry's also the mayor, I believe.
It's like a pretty darn good place to stop.
It might be some.
Yeah.
It's some good food. But no, we were talking about...
get you a Robbie burger there.
I would try one of those. I'd be all about it. But no, we have the situation in Fayetteville where we had the rain delay. And let me say this too. Vanderbilt was hosting Bama last weekend. And they didn't play on Sunday. They got rained out. So they only played twice. And Bama could have beaten them on Sunday. I'm not saying.
Never know, yeah.
But that might have cost Vandy a SEC championship.
It could. And presuming there's not another rain out there, they're now going to play 29 games. So that takes the tiebreak.
Right.
That could help. It could hurt. You don't know. But, like, they had the tiebreak over Tennessee. So Tennessee's in first place in the East now by a half game.
Right.
And
the tiebreaker now doesn't mean anything.
No, it is defunct.
Yes.
The tiebreak there. So it's – but it is odd because in years past – and I think we might have been a little bit more just desperate to get more games on TV, but the fact now all of them are streamed, and it's a lot easier to maneuver games around now. And pretty much every year, all 14 are playing 30. That just used to not be the case.
Right.
And that also, I mean, when you brought that up last week, that this is the first time that we've sat around for a rain delay in a long time. And that's a good point. It just doesn't happen that much.
And I'm glad, thankful that they – let you move games around because, as we know, that was not friendly to Georgia and Knoxville.
No, it wasn't.
Several years ago. But it just surprised me that Vandy wasn't trying, and I don't know the circumstances, but that's one of those where, and we know how Tim Corbin is.
Yeah.
He tried to make Georgia play in one of the worst weather storms in the history of Nashville.
That's true.
Which is so for
they said
for
it was a 1,000-year flood.
Sounds like something from the Bible.
Yeah, I mean, like, we couldn't.
That's what it was.
On I-75.
But there's a window.
Yeah, well, I didn't have anything like this. Like this BMW MX I-6 competition to navigate me around. I had to go to Murfreesboro and kind of loop around there. But
that's just weird. If they end up not winning the SEC championship because of that. That's interesting.
So, in the league, favorite places to go for me, I love Oxford, Mississippi. Love Ole Miss. I love going down to Baton Rouge for the food. And if you enjoy a card game or two, there's access to play to a game where you can count to 21 if you happen to enjoy that sort of thing. And Nashville's such a great city too. I love Nashville, Tennessee. So those would be at the top of the list for our places to go. Now, one thing we were bringing up traveling, there are a lot of Georgia fans that have never been to Gainesville because of football games in Jacksonville.
And most Florida fans have never been to Athens.
That's right. That's right.
Because of the football game in Jacksonville. So whenever we go to Gainesville, I don't know about you, but I always get asked about, what's it like? Because all my friends have been to Jacksonville 50 times. They've never seen Gainesville.
Sure.
So what's one word you would use to describe Gainesville, Florida?
Hot.
That's what I was going to say.
It's just hot. It reminds me, my hometown of Statesboro is similar in that Gainesville is close enough to the coast where it's flat and it's just going to be hot, but you're not close enough to get any sort of an ocean breeze.
Why is it that Gainesville and Tallahassee are both similar in that sense? Because they're not on the coast.
No, but both of them get
hot.
And but it is, and I think for us, again, because football, it is so much. It's a business trip when you're going.
Yeah.
If the Dogs lose or whoever whatever team. Oh, there's a little miniature horse. It's adorable.
It's just a little old horse,
like little Sebastian.
Sebastian.
And
are we in Pawnee? We could be
Pawnee, Indiana.
Yeah.
If somebody dropped you off right here, blindfolded,
and you saw that horse.
It's like, no, it's
there's Leslie Doan.
But for football, and I mean, you are in and out, and I know for the teams, like, you don't even leave the hotel. But it is cool for baseball. We're down here for 3.5 days, so we have some time. Not a ton of time.
Not much, but some.
When we've got a Saturday night, we can go get a nice dinner.
Yeah,
and you don't have to wait like on a football weekend where it's going to be a 2-hour wait or something like that. So I think you do get to see a little bit more of the towns when you go for a trip, whether it's baseball or even basketball. You just got a little bit more time, and again, you're just, there's not just that, yeah, it's stressful and you want to win, but it's not like football.
All right, was it 3 years ago or 5 years ago when you and me and Lake were having lunch and the word got out that Prince had died?
We
were in Gainesville. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Would that have been 3 years ago?
I can't remember.
Or five. It couldn't have been an even number because we haven't been there since 18. Did he die in 16 or 18?
I don't know.
I'm going to find out.
We could look it up.
But yeah, that always will be something I remember because we were sitting there at lunch. I was like, oh my gosh. What the heck? So that was in
2016.
So April 21st, 2016. So we were in Gainesville that day.
And I love me some Prince. I still think he put on one of the best Super Bowl halftime shows ever. Two of my favorite songs were never really released as singles. One is called Take Me With You. It's off of Purple Rain. It's a great song. And then Darlin' Nikki is a great – that also was never released for radio play, and I think for understandable reasons if you do the lyrics to that.
Don't, go look.
Yes. Love me some Prince, Diamonds and Pearls, Let's Go Crazy, Little Red Corvette. And as Andrew Rothschild once said, we're going to party like it's 1999. But so many great tunes by Prince. You know, and he was a guy, too. I think the thing with Prince, if you had to classify him in one word, it'd be entertainer, because he was a great singer, he was a great writer, he was a great dancer, and he was a great guitarist.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he was the total package. He would be a music version. The rare player in baseball, you hear a guy's a five-tool player. Well, that was Prince. All right, he could sing it, he could play it, he could write it, and he could dance it. I mean, he could go do those full splits, kind of like Freddie Freeman does when he's stretching at first base.
Do you think he liked the Vikings, the Twins, the Timberwolves?
I'm going to go more T-Wolves because he was So he's very short, but he loved basketball. Yeah. Yes.
So is that, you think that was his, the team he supported the most? They have the, what's their hockey team? The Wild. Yeah,
yes.
The Wild.
Yes.
I almost said the North Stars.
Well, they used to be.
Yeah.
They moved to Dallas, which I always said they should have changed their nickname to the Lone Star.
Yeah, exactly.
You ever have a Lone Star beer?
The National
beer of Texas.
Yeah, I've had one, yes.
Yeah, that sounds.
Or two.
Yeah. Yeah, I like a good Lone Star beer.
Well, your dad lives out there, so when you go visit him, do you – you drink a Lone Star?
Absolutely.
Like when you go to Jamaica, do you drink a red stripe?
Is that right?
Yeah.
I think you got to have
when
the
in Rome.
So when we were in Fayetteville, we got the pizza place we were at. They had some local. I guess a lot of college towns.
I like to try the local beer.
Yeah, we got a good one. It was good.
It was a local lager.
Yeah, local lager. The thing is, though, those things, it's not like your normal domestic beers. These have got a little bit more juice to them.
Yeah, well, it was kind of late, and I had to get up early to do the morning show.
You had to get up real early.
I was trying to stay off the IPA highway.
We were CST.
Yeah.
That 6 a.m. meant 5 a.m.
5 a.m.
Oh, my God.
And it is so quiet in the hotel. It's like,
you got to tell that story. So that was funny, too. You're like, oh, my God.
I walked down to the lobby to get, a cup of coffee. And it was about 4:45 Central. And it was just, you could hear, I mean, you could have heard a feather fall on the floor.
Like if there was a mouse running
around.
Oh,
my gosh, yes.
You could have heard the footsteps.
And I'm like, oh, my, I'm going to sit in my room, and I'm going to wake everybody up in the hallway. And, you know, we're on the same floor as the players. I'm like, I don't want to wake the players up. But I guess it was okay. No one said anything. But I was hoping they would. I was like, hey, if I'm talking too loud, let me know.
Did you have to do the
change? Yeah, yeah, that was like a golf voice.
A golf voice right there. Just coming in live from the Courtyard Marriott Sea itself.
Luckily, it didn't come to that.
So golf.
Wait a minute. We're in. We have made it to Monticello.
Yes, sir. So now we need to go.
We're gonna take a right here behind this car.
Yes, sir. Oh, we're in one of those town squares here
in
Monticello.
We need
to go towards Forsyth.
That is correct.
That's where the interstate is.
Yes, sir.
That was also a legendary south of Atlanta speed trap.
Yep.
Plus, this thing, it's got jersey plates on it.
I know.
The loaner here.
And we're like my cousin Vinny right here.
I mean,
we got a jersey car.
Absolutely.
In Monticello.
We are, by the way.
Although, if we ran into Marissa Tomei, I wouldn't mind that.
You know, she's an Oscar winner. Are we going straight?
We're going straight,
okay.
Yeah.
So the great Larry Edwards lives in Milledgeville. Larry and Sharon and Milo, the 18-pound tabby cat.
Yep.
They live, and Bella as well. They live in Milledgeville. When you go to Larry's house on Lake Sinclair, you pass the old hotel where they filmed Joe Pesci and Marissa Tomei were seen. The old General Putnam Inn.
General Putnam Inn.
So I think it's been demolished now.
Okay.
But that is a nice little piece of.
That's a great movie.
It's terrific. And I think when you think about Pesci, you know, he's a guy. You're talking obviously Casino, Goodfellas,
mm-hmm.
masterpieces, mob movies. But when you throw in my cousin Vinny, you know, he was in Home Alone, and that's a pretty darn good.
He was also in the what were the Mel Gibson and Danny?
Oh yeah, Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon.
Yeah. Okay.
He was awesome in that.
He was great.
Yeah.
So he's had that, you know, as the bit supporting role there too. But you know, and obviously, I mean, in Goodfellas and Casino were his two most famous. Yeah, my cousin Vinny's a terrific, terrific
very good movie. And I saw it not too long ago, and it still holds up pretty good.
Well, you got the Karate Kid stealing
Karate
can
Kid
of tuna.
And Herman Munster.
Very
Fred
true.
Gwynn.
Fred Gwynn.
The Judge.
Oh, that's a great.
That's a good cast.
Very good cast.
So, by the way, here's a. Whoa.
Hello there.
Car came in kind of hot there.
Yeah,
so, when I was in. When I was in Georgia, I graduated in 1990. So this would have had to have been 1989 or 1990 for one of our one of the classes I took at the Grady School. Now this is going to make me sound like a dinosaur. We had to do a radio play. You know, they used to do.
I listened to that on XM 148. I listened to those old radio.
Do they
shows,
carry those?
Like Nightbeat and. just yours truly, Johnny Dollar, those old video shows.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. So I'll have that on later today.
Our class project was we had to do like a 30-minute radio play. You know, you had to have the sound effects. You had the story. You had to have the narrator. You had to have the actors. You had to have the whole thing. So our – and if I remember correctly, it was called the Cat's Paws or something. And it was a story about somehow it's something you can look up. I wish I remember the name of it. Basically, these people ran into some kind of good luck charm that gave them three wishes. But as it turns out, the three wishes come back to haunt them.
Well, that's like a Twilight song.
It's kind of like a Twilight song. Kind of
the genie. It all goes bad.
Yeah. So we had to have a narrator, and our teacher suggested a couple of famous people that might do it. Well, we got Fred Gwynn to do it, Herman Munster. He did it for free. So our class project, the narrator, was Herman Munster. And he was so cool. Now, we didn't meet him or anything. We had to send him the lines, and he cut them and everything because he was out in Los Angeles. But I always thought that was really cool that he did that. That was nice of him to do that.
I've never known that.
I don't know. It doesn't really come up that often, I guess.
I don't know. That's
But that was pretty cool. So even though I never met him and that kind of thing, I always felt like I had a little connection there to Fred Gwynn.
And Herman Munster was a great Brooklyn Dodgers prospect as well.
That's right.
He had the tryout with him.
That's right. Chicks dig the long ball,
chicks
man.
Dig the long ball.
Even if it's Frankenstein.
So Fred Gwynn narrated a radio play that you did.
And I wish I knew where it was. It's probably over somewhere in the archives at UGA.
Sugar the Grady Schoolers. But yeah, those old shows, like you'd hear, like, and then, you know, Dave walked into the room and hear the
door slam. We had to go make the sound effects, which I thought was kind of cool.
Well, I think for stuff like that, it gives you an idea, and I think you need to appreciate the way things used to be and what went into it and how we've evolved. I was talking to a guy, Emily and I met a couple at the beach, and this guy, basically all he could tell me was that he did naval undersea navigation. And this guy was sharp as a tack, and there were some things I asked him that he just couldn't answer. But he did tell me too, and this is what he always felt good about this, that even with all the technology that we have, that our officers, they're still trained to navigate and do things, you know, the old-fashioned way with the maps and those compasses and all. So in case something did happen and all your technology went down, we could still function and survive.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, no, I think that's always a good thing. So, Emily, I always get – so my mom, CPA, she knows money. I did not inherit that trait. She always told me, you always carry your $20 bill with you because you never know.
Get you a $2 bill, too?
I've got a $2 bill.
I do, too.
And a lucky linden leaf in there.
I do, too.
So, which, by the way, too, back in my younger days, like now I'm much more responsible. When I would go down to St. Simon's for a few days, I'd always put 40 bucks in my glove compartment. So I'm like, all right, if something goes wrong, I can $20 will get me the gas to get home, and I can get something to eat.
Exactly.
$20 will go a long way at the Dairy Lane.
My gosh.
So, anyway, so I'd always put that 40 cents. But anyway, so I always told Emily, because I've always got cash on me, and nobody think about robbing me. It's not a ton of cash. Like Darren Schoenrock, our old pitching coach, he was a Barons pitching coach when Michael Jordan played there. He said, oh, yeah, Michael always had $10,000 in cash with him.
Don't we all? Wait,
that's $100 bills, right?
Don't we all?
Oh, yeah, you always had at least $10,000 in cash. Okay. I was saying, well, Emily, you know, you always need to have a little cash. You know, what if the ATM doesn't work or the pocket? She goes, well, that's what I've got you for.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. You got to know the old ways of doing things.
All right. So it's called The Monkey's Paw, a supernatural short story written around the turn of the century in 1900. In the story, the three wishes are granted to the owner of the monkey's paw, but the wishes come with an enormous price for interfering with fate. So it has a little twist there at the end.
Nice.
I would say what it is, but
I don't know.
It's only been 120 years. I don't know if that's too soon or not.
I might have heard that on channel 148.
The Monkey's Paw.
There's an old radio show called Suspense. And okay. They would read all stories like that, and old Edgar Allan Poe things.
It's
like
a good
that.
Short story too. You can read it. I mean, it's actually pretty good.
See, where else are you going to hear about Joe Pesci, the Monkey's Paw, and Georgia football in one podcast?
That's on the road again.
The only thing we hadn't really hit on is golf. And, you know, we're so proud, and I'll throw in John Isner, what he's done, his remarkable tennis career. You know, just how many schools out there could say like, oh yeah, we have great interest in tennis because one of our best players ever is a star on tour, not many. But Dave and I are both golf junkies, and just every week, you know, there's a Georgia guy in the top 10. There's a Georgia guy in contention. What was the deal last year? Was it the PGA? Were we like, it had to be.
It's like 8 for 8.
You know, making the cut. Yeah. I mean, it's just unbelievable. Yeah. You know, like Keith Mitchell nearly won last week, but just, I mean, that is so sweet that we've got all these great golfers. And when you talk about, if you go through history, just look at SEC championships and top rankings and players on tour, Georgia and Florida, there's a pretty good gap historically then when you start going down to number 3 in the SEC. Obviously, it was like Alabama and LSU have been great in the 21st century, but Georgia and Florida have been great at golf for a long, long time. I'm talking about going back to like the 1950s.
Why is it that it feels like the guys on the PGA Tour all have a college that they went to, where in pro tennis it's not the same thing?
I think, but in tennis, I think you just probably hit your peak a little bit younger. And,
yeah,
you know, there's so many
point.
Great players from Europe and
South America.
But
like, do the top American players now in men's tennis, and I guess women's tennis too, do they go to college?
And the women, not as much. You know, with women's athletics, so there's, you know, a lot of times just the maturity. And when you think about how many gymnasts or swimmers, remember Katie Ledecky won a gold medal? She was 15.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's just generally not the case on the men's side. But I think with John's success, a guy like Steve Johnson, who went back-to-back NCAAs at USC, and by the way, went undefeated 2 straight years.
Wow.
Rolling through the Pac-12. And,
is that good?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think for guys like that doing that, I think it's definitely been a help to college tennis. And John just always talks about the support system he had. But you think going way back, I mean, obviously, John McEnroe went to Stanford for a year. Jimmy Connors went to UCLA. You know, Arthur Ashe, Stan Smith, Tony Traver, all those guys went to college.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a lot of them visited Athens, Georgia.
A lot of them did and have stories to tell. But even guys like, let's say, who were some of the top Americans that didn't go to college? Like Pete Sampras.
Right.
Jim Courier.
But I think Sampras.
Michael Chang.
Correct. But I think Sampras won his first U.S. Open. He was like 19.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
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 Yeah, it's just a different ball
but
game.
But when McEnroe, when McEnroe played for Stanford in, 78?
78,
he
yes.
had already been to the semifinals at Wimbledon.
He had. So basically the summer between his high school senior year and his freshman year at Stanford, he had been a Wimbledon semifinalist, and he and Mary Carrillo won the Wimbledon mixed doubles championship. So he had already been a single semifinalist and had a Grand Slam doubles championship.
I mean, that ain't happening today.
No.
No, not at all.
No, there's just.
And then he goes to Stanford.
Right, and won the NCAA championship.
So how long was he at Stanford? Just the 1 year?
I think he was 1 year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he realized he needed to start getting paid.
Yes.
So was the great Dick Gould his coach?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And he was tremendous.
Yeah, what a great – I saw a picture the other day of the great Bobby Marinchek posted on the UGA tennis letterman site, and it was Manny's first year as our head coach, and it was Manny standing next to Dick Gould at an NCAA match like – that's a lot of championships between those two guys.
That's incredible.
That is a lot of hardware between those two legends.
I know. I love the spring sports, love the golf, love the tennis. I tell you what, with what Petrus has done with track and field.
My gosh.
It's just, it's the spring. I mean, it's so different than the fall, obviously, but it's just, it's so much fun.
Well, and yeah, when you throw out two, and obviously Jack Bowerly, what he's done with our swimming programs.
Gosh.
And now track, just the number of Olympians that we have. somebody was telling me, I think we would have been at the 2016 Rio Olympics. I think if the University of Georgia were a country, I don't know, we'd have had like the 12th most medals or something like that.
Wow.
But I mean, one of the things about Jack that's so impressive, I got to cover swimming at the London Olympics in 2012. And I believe that year, in addition to the United States, we had swimmers representing 7 other countries. So I think I believe we had 8.
It's also funny too.
But now track's getting like that too.
Oh yeah, yeah. But it's also funny. You said that if the University of Georgia were a country, but of course when you see University of Georgia, there's all these people that mess up and think it's the country of Georgia.
Apparently on a medal count, I'm sure it was a computer glitch. when it was running the country medal to the country of Georgia, it won a medal, and it was the G. What's up there? That's awesome. Go dogs.
From Georgia.
Yeah, maybe. Hey, what did we win? The ski jump? Yes, it was the Winter Olympics. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Pretty good.
But talking about the track and field, I got to interview Anna Hall, who was she's a heptathlete, pentathlete. I mean, she is incredible. She's going to be an Olympian. You know, you think about what Matthew Bowling has done. I mean, and I wanted to mention this too. Meg Kowalski also has worked at the Sports Information Office. She's my favorite women's tennis player, and she is, I mean, tough bulldog through and through.
The epitome.
Jeff Wallace always says, he goes, her warrior mode's at about 8. He goes, I got to turn it down to about a 4.
Yeah.
But I wanted to mention this for Meg because her record is amazing. And we were in Arkansas, and she was playing at the NCAAs, and noticed she had won the first set. And she had a lead in the second set and lost it and got beat 6-0 in the third. So I was texting with Trey Littlefield, our great SID. I said, hey, what's going on with Meg? He's like, man, she has gotten violently ill. I'm sure Meg's just loving us talking about this. But
yeah.
But she had gotten sick on the court and everything. She wound up having to go to the hospital and getting IV, and she was dehydrated. So a lot of times you'll see with tennis players who are prima donnas, that they'll just, I'm going to default. She played through it.
Yeah.
And took, you know, and again, she had no chance here. I mean, she's getting sick on the court, but the fact that she played through it, that toughness. So the next day, she had sent me a little note because I was checking on her, and I said, hey, you know, if Emily needs to bring you anything, just let me know. And of course, you know, we got the best trainers and doctors in the world. But,
yeah. But in case they can't handle it.
Can she bring some ice cream or something like that? But so she says, oh, yeah, I'm just going to listen to the baseball game. And she was with the other girls in the men's tennis match the next day. She had made a sign to cheer the team on. And that's just, that's just awesome. Thought that was an awesome. And she's awesome. And just the camaraderie that the spring sports teams have as well. So I got a pretty good charge. I mean, they sent us a photo. They were between, I don't know, like either Ole Miss and State or Auburn and Alabama. But this was when we had the radio. We were on the TV on the Plus as well. So, like, the girls were watching. They were watching us call the baseball game.
Yeah.
They were watching us first. So, yeah. But I'm like, the girls are on the bus, and they're just, yeah, they're watching the baseball game.
Yeah.
Oh, that was awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah, that's a neat thing. But, yeah, so, Meg, if you're listening, I'm sorry I told the story about you puking on the court.
Yeah.
But you're a warrior.
And keep it going next week.
And it's been a heck of a run. I mean, the women have been just demolishing teams. I'll tell you, the men had kind of fallen on some hard times, lost a couple of tough matches, but came through and won 7 straight in the SEC and now into the round of 16. And they were in one of those Vizhnik food, no not where spots.
But, yeah.
As a great Georgia fan, Judge John Ellington said, sometimes you find yourself in the middle of nowhere. And sometimes in the middle of nowhere, you find yourself. And I think
that's
quite apropos
yes.
for sports. And by the way, I found myself in the middle of nowhere on the golf course many times.
Kind of like Rory McIlroy.
Has anybody ever been over here before?
Exactly. Speaking of, we're heading into Macon. We're twice a year. They always have a good cocktail party.
Mm-hmm.
Always a lot of fun. That we've attended a few times. And again, just glad to be getting things back to normal.
It's awesome. And that was when Josh made that announcement that we were going to be at 100%. And that was just big grin, first of all, for baseball, and then just with obviously with an acknowledgement. And the university was kind enough to ask me to sit in with Josh for his Brooks Bulletin, and had a great time doing that. And he says that we are planning on being at 100% capacity. Absolutely. We got to be. We got to get it back. And it's going to be so exciting. But I have enjoyed every moment of this spring. And, man, this baseball team had so much heart and fight. Lou Grant, Spunk.
And I hate Spunk. I mean, we like Spunk.
I just have a feeling, even with this latest dose of bad news, and I hate it for Ryan Webb. He's such a great kid. He's had such a great career. I just have a feeling that this team's gonna just find a way to get the necessary number of wins to make it in. But in all honesty, before your truth time here, before the year, I thought with all that we had lost to the draft, then with the injuries we had, I thought, you know, if we go over 500 overall and make the SEC tournament, 12 teams make it to Birmingham, so then I think this has been a good year. Well, obviously,
that's mission accomplished.
Yeah, expectations change. And now, you know, you're talking about a chance to maybe make it to the NCAA tournament. So, your expectations obviously go up. But, you know, if you'd have told us before the year that we'd be, 28-18, and that we'd be 11-13 coming in, I'd have taken that with all that
absolutely.
We lost and as supercharged as the league is. Our buddy John Parker had a good line. He said, you know, here's the deal. He said, we're a really good team in an elite league.
Mm-hmm.
And we know how great this league is in baseball. I mean, we've had multiple times. We've had four of the eight teams in Omaha. Then this year, just because of only having five rounds of the draft, there are some literal super teams. I mean, guys coming back that in a regular year, there's no way would have come back. Or guys making it to college who in years past, no way they would have made it to college. And unless they just self-correct. And, I mean, so you've just got these incredible super teams out there. And, hey, we've beaten the number one ranked team in the country three times on the road, twice Vandy and once Arkansas. So that tells me that we've got what it takes. And if we can just find our way into the postseason, as we know, any sport, you make it to the postseason, you never know what can
happen. Anything can happen. Just ask Auburn from a couple of years ago. I always like to mention that Mississippi State team that made it to the finals 8 years ago.
They went 15-15 in the league. Auburn, who Dave just brought up, they were 14-16 2 years ago.
Yep.
Made it to Omaha.
Made it to Omaha.
So
just got to find a way to get in there.
Got to find a way. But I love this team. It's been so much fun. And, you know, it's been – plus we got to get on the charter – Dave and I both got our shots. My arm was sore for a couple of days.
Woo.
But it was good. So not being able to travel with the guys on the first two flights, you know, for outside of guys like Mason Meadows, Ryan Webb, you know,
Riley King.
We don't just know the young guys. So it's been nice to kind of you get to say hello to some of the younger guys.
Yeah. Start just getting to say hello to them and meet them a little bit.
It's great because they are.
It's like we saw Liam Sullivan, what he did last week, Jake Woods, what he did last week, all these freshmen. Certainly looking forward to seeing what they're going to do in their careers.
Well, and we know this, no matter how this season ends up, I think, Dave, we were talking about this maybe as early as week one, that – you know, this team, again, has performed better, I think, than most thought. I'm like, we're going to be good next year. Then I think in 2 years, I mean, when you look at all this freshman pitching, guys like Corey Collins, Parks Harbor, Fernando Gonzalez, in 2 years, we could be really, really, really – I mean, that could be a great team in 2 years.
Absolutely.
When these freshmen are juniors. But we've got a good team this year. And
but you know, it's funny with the portal. You don't know what you're going to have.
You don't
next
know.
Year.
But I'm going to presume most of these guys, they're Georgia guys. This is where they want to be.
Yeah.
But I think where for a school like Georgia, you know, you're assuming most of your top guys are going to come back for baseball, and you know, and who knows? Maybe you get a super senior or something as well. You know, a guy like what Justin Schaefer and Devontae White are doing in football, and you know, yeah, you're right. Maybe there is that. That addition through the portal, I don't think you can make a living off of that, but there could be that guy to fill a role, certainly.
Sure.
But we've got a lot of good pieces on this team, and I know the excitement is sky high, and I just felt like, and probably because baseball was having such a good year last year, that for whatever reason it felt like baseball, as much as if not more than any sport, really got kicked in the teeth the worst of any last year. And
baseball always takes it on the chin anyway.
I know, and I know just for us, you know, we can tell, when we think about those great Omaha teams we've had, 01, 04, 06, 08, the run we had in 2011, you know, the teams we had in 18 and 19, we can gauge just in our small sample size the interest level of the program. And when Georgia's playing good, we have incredible interest from the Bulldog Nation, and in particular in the state of Georgia. But I tell Dave, I was probably asked more about this season's baseball team prior to the year than any team I can remember. And maybe going back to, say, when Gordon Beckham was playing or Jeff Kepinger. But, I mean, I think you were in the same boat. Just the interest level is so high in the program right now.
And you add in the fact that people haven't been able to go to the games.
Right.
They want to go to the games. So at least next week. I know it's only three games, the last three games at home this year. But I just can't wait to see fully filled back up. Oh, I got to get that little dog off the road. I hate that.
Jump on that there, buddy.
There's a dog just walking out on the road.
Yeah, well, hopefully he's running home.
You take off?
Yeah,
good.
He is. Head up the driveway.
Good.
We love
it. Hey, we're out in the country.
We are. Love the King Man. And don't forget Ozzie the Cat.
Ozzie the Cat, the Bus Man, and
Albus and Hermie.
Great, gorgeous Hermie.
I cooked them some salmon today. I got the grill going. Well, Albus said, "Mister,
why didn't you bring some for me?
You better get that going." I said, "Are you going to let your mom eat any of that over the weekend?" They said, "No chance."
Nope.
No chance. But you came up with the idea, and we love the interaction with the tweets. But when we started getting dog pictures in there, that's just awesome.
And so keep sending them to us.
Keep sending them to us. And we definitely do want to thank Chip Towers again for writing that kind of. Chip, the check's in the mail.
We'll have to send it in two different installments.
That's exactly right. But that was very kind. And, you know, as we we have so much fun doing this.
It is.
It's.
And people always say, y'all should record your conversations when you're in the car together. Like, well, we're doing it now. Obviously, it's the PG version of some of our conversations. But this has been a lot of fun.
No, it has been. And then we'll have on our premium edition.
Yeah.
We'll go with the...
Let's do one coming back.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
We'll do one.
I know we'll be tired and... hopefully you're in a good mood, but...
Oh, yeah.
Might be, the surliness might be
better. And then we'll have our Frank Costanza fessions. I got a lot of problems with you people.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of fun. Hopefully this makes it off the cutting room floor.
That's right.
He's Dave Johnson. I'm Jeff Dantzler. Folks, we are on the road again, and we are doing it in this MX I-6 competition. That is a 007. I mean, it's got an ejector seat and everything.
Thing's awesome.
This thing is awesome.
Love it, love it. And it is red and black.
Fingers crossed, no tickets. Because to quote Ricky Bobby, I want to go fast, and this thing goes really fast. Talk to you next time.
Go Dogs.
Thanks for listening. Go Dogs.